You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. 7:06. Nice to have you here on a Monday morning, April 28th. It is a dark and stormy morning across parts of Wisconsin, and so we're going to start right away with meteorologist Brittany Merlot, and then we'll get back to Kristen Lyerly, Selena Heller, Greg Bach. But Brittany, let's kick things off with you, because what's going through central and northern Wisconsin right now, this is just the appetizer of what is yet to come coming up today.
It really is. It's just going to wake you up a little bit, some rumbles of thunder, maybe some small hail and some downpours on occasion. Of course, that's through central Wisconsin, headed towards the Fox Valley now. And this is the warm front lifting through the state. I mean, we've got nice temperatures already in the low 60s off west, even up north and down south. If you've got the rain, it's in the 40s right now. So what we're looking at this afternoon is the perfect atmosphere for thunderstorms to spark up, become severe very rapidly, and they could produce some strong tornadoes, large hail, damaging winds, and also some heavy, heavy downpours, where we're at least looking at an inch of rainfall rolling through the state this afternoon and evening. And we've got not only the round of tornado storms that could spark up this afternoon, but also a line moving through later on this evening that could have some storms and tornadoes embedded in there, hidden in rain. And as those roll through in that line, about 70-mile-per-hour wind gusts are possible, hail as well. So we've got a lot to prepare for. Multiple rounds of storms headed our way. Again, I think from about 3 to 4-ish, some of these strong ones will start to spark in southwestern parts of the state, rolling in towards the central area, and hopefully starting to weaken as they move east and towards Lake Michigan this evening. But of course, stay weather savvy. I just want to make sure everyone has a way to get a warning, even if you're asleep, because this line tonight could come through about 10, maybe even to midnight into some places like Madison. So I've got a weather radio, a NOAA weather radio that kind of goes off. It'll wake me up in case my phone isn't loud enough. And I've got a lot of things too, like flashlights, different stuff ready to go, taking shelter in the lowest level, interior room, things like that. You definitely want to have the plan in place now. Don't panic. Just have a plan in case you're in this situation, because the situation could unfold rather quickly. And of course, when you're in a panic mode, you kind of forget things. So just practice your plan. Know what to do. Make sure everybody's in the loop. Make sure your friends, your family, everybody knows to stay aware this evening.
Yeah. And look, we all who have cell phones, you know, we play with the notifications. Sometimes we turn them off or on for this or that. Today would be a good day at looking at what is your particular weather app or whatever it is that you want to use. And if you normally have the notifications off, turn them on for today and tonight, because that one might really be the one that affects you and you want to know all about it. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. It is cloudy with a thunderstorm, 45 degrees. It was a great weekend. I got some yard work done, watched the NFL draft. Green Bay did an excellent job. He says, I've got my cell phone and my iPad staying charged. He sent us a note about how they covered tornadoes with, you know, people using their phones to call into radio stations back in the 1960s. And Alicia writes in, orange sunrise here in Seymour. As my dad always used to say, orange in the morning, sailors take warning.
And I was going to say that. Yes, I noticed that this morning too, Alicia. It was kind of an eerie vibe because you knew, tonight is just going to be bad.
Yeah. And we mentioned the humidity and the warmth. And so I think everybody has that. I mean, we don't all have like our left knee feels a certain way when it's going to get stormy. You know, not everybody's like that. But there are definitely some conditions where almost everybody, you go outside and you go, oh, yeah, this feels like something's off, you know?
It sure does. And don't let the sunshine fool you. We are going to see spots of sunshine. It is going to be nice at some points this afternoon. But that right there is the perfect mixture and fuel for these storms to get so strong. So Don't be fooled.
And Rob Concur says that even with the thunderstorm in Tigerton, there's an orange sunrise out there as well. So forewarned is forearmed. So thank you, Brittany, very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it as always. Let's talk a bit more about the NFL draft, because Dr. Lyerly was there. It was right there in her backyard, essentially. And Selina Heller made the drive all the way over, cramming a kid's bike in the car. Not for her, although she probably could get away with it, but there was, what, a bike parade that Emory could take part in over there? What was the story there?
Oh, my goodness, yes. So my friend Aaron Kotenberg, Kurt Kotenberg, used to work at the station over here. So we talked Friday night, and she said, there's a bike parade, and the kids can be in it. And so I crammed the bike in the car at like midnight. We left here at 3:30 in the morning and we drove to Green Bay because, you know, that's the coolest tradition that the kids can participate in during Packers training camp. It goes back to, oh my gosh, what, 1958. So it's the coolest thing. So we got there and walked a long ways. And then we got to the stadium and 250 kids were in this bike parade riding into Lambeau. And it was the coolest thing. And let's see, there are Packers alumni, Nick Barnett, Tremont Williams, Nick Collins joined the parade also. Let's see, who else? Packer CEO Mark Murphy, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, they led the parade, and we drove right into the draft stage, and so it was pretty cool.
Was there anything said about the unusually tall blonde kid that was riding her bike somewhere near the back? Kristen, of course, is pointing at herself. Yes.
Were you in the bike parade?
Perfect. I was not, but I love that they do this. And if you've ever had the opportunity to see it during training camp, it is one of the most enlightening, uplifting things, especially to see these new players who are new to the community, and suddenly they find themselves riding a child's bike and and walking with their parents and having these conversations and looking at the media. It just really, it screams community. It's beautiful.
It really does.
I was trying to explain it all to Emery, you know, she, you know, it's like, okay, I'm riding my bike and that's just fun enough for her. Uh-huh. But I had to explain and how it was so cool. And I've always wanted you to do this, but it was a very cold morning. So that was kind of a factor into the morning also. So all the kids were a little cold, but it was fun.
But, you know, again, you've got a memory there. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the nice thing about it. Hey, just to change the subject briefly, I'd normally mention what's in our daily newsletter here. You can sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. Well, the newsletter happens to mention that it is time to start getting ready for farmers markets. They will be, popping up around the state, the ones that aren't, you know, there all the time. And there includes a link to a handful of farmers markets that are so popular that you should put them on your bucket list, maybe for a road trip. Selina, you are no stranger to the Eau Claire farmers market, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, we love the farmers market. And, you know, I think farmers markets evolve into just like community events now, because ours here in Eau Claire, it's under the Pavilion in Phoenix Park, and they've added like an artist market and entertainment and balloons and just so many different things, music some days. And they're just really events, community gatherings, something fun to do on a Saturday morning. So yeah, they're so much fun to get out to. We try to get there a lot.
Kristen, you have multiple markets that you go to, or is there just one standard one that you like to stop in at?
Green Bay has a wonderful market on Saturday mornings. I came from Madison, and the Madison Farmers Market is just off the charts.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't think that Green Bay was going to be able to compare, but they do. And they have another one on Wednesday nights on the other side of the river. So Green Bay doesn't mess around when it comes to farmers markets. Highly encouraged, even if you're a farmers market snob like me.
Farmers market snob like Kristen.
Well, now I want you to come down to Kenosha and check out our farmers market, because I think it starts outdoor next weekend or the week after that. And I will just say this. Every Saturday, you can pet some puppies.
There's
a pet rescue who comes every single week, and they always have anywhere between 4 to 6 puppies, and they're ready to go. Trust me, my wife tells me every Saturday. They're ready to go.
Get some coffee, a pastry, maybe some meat, and pet a puppy. You're good.
There you go.
Yeah. Sounds like a nice lineup. How did things go over the weekend with the Dr. Kristen Lyerly show? You had Patrick McBride on.
Oh, Dr. Pat McBride. He's a preventive cardiologist. He's the former dean of students at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And we talked about NIH funding, how the cuts in funding are affecting the university, not just these research studies, like a handful of research studies, but really undermining the purpose of the university at its core. You know, if you know about the Wisconsin idea means that the University of Wisconsin is where the ideas are generated, but that goes out into the community. And in the community, through your extension offices, they bring those ideas back to the university to do the studies. It's this big holistic thing that benefits every single person here in Wisconsin, and it's all at risk because of these cuts in NIH funding. So that's what we mostly talked about, but we definitely had to get into some Wisconsin sports as well. And he shared some fond memories of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Junior Bridgman. Got a little tearful. Aww,
and so you'll be doing this again next Saturday, based out of the Green Bay Civic Media radio station.
Yeah, next Saturday, we're going to talk with Sheboygan Mayor Ryan Sorensen and some other folks from the Sheboygan area. We're going to be talking about what's happening with childcare and how it doesn't just affect families who need childcare right now, but it affects entire communities. So that's going to be a really interesting conversation from lots of different perspectives.
Okay, so look over at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, to learn a bit more about that. Hey, Selena, you mentioned talking to the curator of the Packers Hall of Fame, somebody that you knew from your Black River Falls backyard, and so I thought we've got just enough time to maybe hear a clip about some of the draft stuff there. Can you set that up?
Sure. Yeah. Brent Hensel is from Black River Falls, and we went to high school together. And I thought, oh my gosh, what a great time to talk to Brent about the museum and all the things going on there. So let's see. Do you want to hear that now, Pat?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Set that up. What are we going to hear?
All right. I think, let's see, the first time he talks about, what did we talk about first?
You know what? We'll play it, and then you can tell us what we heard.
All right.
Hit it, Greg.
I'm always thinking about the history and long term. So one of the things I got to do this week was go through the NFL stage in the green room. It was well before the draft. I wasn't anywhere near there during the draft. But we got to request certain things, like huge banners and like a phone from the green room. And then 10 years from now or 20 years from now, if we will look back at this moment when Green Bay hosted the draft, we will have artifacts. So working on getting stuff, trying to get Mark Murphy's speech that he read off his notes from the first night, so that's one of the things I do. Like, since and Lambeau Field now is hosting more and more events that aren't necessarily football. Like, we had a soccer match a few years ago. We've had the Badgers. So I'm always trying to collect, because you never know what you might turn into an exhibit in the future.
That's true. You got to be ready for everything there from Brent. So that's what he had to say, Selena, in case you were wondering.
That's what we were talking about. Okay. I didn't know which one was first. So yes, Packers go back 105 years. So Brent has a big job of saving all of that history, and he wanted to save things from the draft too for people later, like he said. So that was pretty neat. And then we talked about...
We'll talk more about it in a little bit. Let's take a break here. Still to come, we have a former head of the U.S. Forest Service coming on to talk about President Trump opening up national forests to more commercial logging. We'll have more live from Chippewa Falls. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Do a little sports here quick at 7:22. Kristen Yelich had two hits and two RBIs. The Brewers beat the Cardinals 7-1 Sunday to avoid a series sweep. Jackson Churio added two hits as the Brewers snapped a four-game losing streak. Jose Quintana struck out six over five innings of work, becoming the first Brewers pitcher to win his first four starts for the team since CC Sabathia in 2008. The Brewers are off today, headed to the south side of Chicago to play the White Sox Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Then they are home against the Cubs starting on Friday. The Milwaukee Bucks are on the verge of another humiliating first-round playoff elimination at the hands of the Indiana Pacers. That was in progress even before Dame Lillard went out with an injury. The Bucks lost 129 to 103. They are down 3-1 in that best of seven series. Lillard went down on his own midway through the first quarter, and injured Achilles is suspected. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 28 points, but no other member of the starting lineup had more than 6 points. Game 5 is the early evening game tomorrow in Indianapolis, and that catches you up with sports here. And so we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Kristen Lyerly and with Selena Heller. Both were at the NFL draft, and Selena was talking to the curator of the Packers Hall of Fame and sharing some of the bits of your interview about that. So where do you want to pick up?
Yeah, Brent Hensel, he's a great historian. He first started out in teaching and then got this job as curator. And it's the kind of all of the best worlds, because you get to be a historian with the Packers. He grew up in Wisconsin, so loves the Packers, and just a great story. We talked about just driving into Lambeau Field every day for your work. Can you imagine that? Like, how cool is that? Yes. So that's what Brent gets to do every day. So let's hear from him talking about the Hall of Fame. Goes back more than 50 years. It's the oldest Hall of Fame in NFL history. There's about six other museums in Hall of Fames in the NFL, and oftentimes they look to the Hall of Fame, Packers Hall of Fame, to make theirs if other cities want them. So they call Brent up and ask him, how do you do this? What do you do? And more and more NFL towns are thinking about doing Hall of Fames and museums like the Packers. So here's Brent.
I try not to like take it for granted. I mean, you come to the same place for every day for over 10 years, but this is a very special place. And it's we get people from coming not just in the draft, but all over the world all the time. Like, it's on their bucket list. They go on stadium tours here. And so you try to remember that we try to make every moment like special, because this is maybe their one chance to come here and experience it.
That's great. That's again Brent Hensel, the Packers Hall of Fame curator. It clearly sounds like he enjoys the work, Selena.
Oh, he loves doing what he loves. And I asked him, you know, what's the coolest exhibit? What's the funnest? What's the funniest? And so he told me about kind of an interesting, because there's interactive exhibits. They span the test of time, the whole story of the Packers. So from early on to currently, and now right now there's a special draft exhibit. And now he talks about kind of one of the funny exhibits at the Packer Hall of Fame.
We have an artifact, Vince from the 60s and Vince Lombardi. So when the Packers, after they won their first championship under Vince Lombardi in 1961, he gave all his players' wives mink stoles. So we have one of the mink stoles. But the funny story to it is he had a number of players that were kind of notorious bachelors, and he didn't want them giving the stole to whoever the random person they were seeing was at the time. And so he made any players that were not married give the mink stole to their mothers.
Oh,
their mothers.
Oh, that's perfect.
I thought that was very funny.
Wow. What a different time.
Right. Right.
But you could, again, hear the pleasure there. And it's something, Kristen, we get every time you talk about going down to Lambeau, and the sense of both community and history that you get down there.
It's funny to hear you say, Selena, that he drives to work every day and it's Lambeau Field, because that's what it's like in Green Bay. So many of us work there. My next door neighbor is in charge of food there. My across the street neighbor is at Lambeau. I ride my bike to Lambeau, but it never wears off for me. Every time I drive by or ride by, I'm like, this is Lambeau freaking Field. This is amazing.
Yeah. And I love that people got to see that from all aspects. And look, we know that there's a lot at that complex already, even more now because of the Titletown efforts and everything else. But I'm sure there are plenty of folks who've been to a Packer game who still haven't gone to the Packer Hall of Fame. They've maybe gone to the pro shop there because it's a big pro shop there at Lambeau Field. But now there is just so much more. And I mean, you never know, and you might see Kristen walking around there. She's practically the mayor for as often as she's walking around.
Just walking around going, does anyone need a checkup? Does anyone need a checkup? Are you good? You need... Just say,
we went
say,
to the pro shop.
Oh, nice.
You did go to the pro shop.
Emery needed pom-poms to cheer at Packer games. She had to get a hat, and then somebody gave her a draft T-shirt. And
oh my goodness.
Another guy came up this. And gave her a draft mini helmet. She
my
walked away.
Goodness.
With all sorts of things.
I wish I was a kid.
So much swag
so
here.
We didn't have much sleep. She was so pumped through the whole day. I couldn't believe she listened when we were in the Packers Hall of Fame and Packer Hall of Fame and got information. And she listened all about the players. And she is ready for school today, like spreading the knowledge. And she said, I know more than the boys.
Yeah,
and that is always the goal. That is the goal. That's the best part. You can check out what Selena's doing over at UpNorthNewsWI.com and UpNorthNews on social media. Thank you, Selena. Glad you had a good trip. Kristen, glad you had a good bike ride. Have a good start to the week. We'll talk to you on Friday.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it.
All right. Still to come, we have a former head of the U.S. Forest Service. That's coming up next. Later, Senator Kelda Roy is about keeping government out of your doctor's exam room. And so much more. Sean O'Malley will give us some comments on protecting your financial nest egg from the Trump slump ahead of the opening bell. Thanks for spending some time here as part of your mornings powered by Up North News. We'll have more live from Chippewa Falls after the Midwest Farm Report here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Did you know that parts of the Shawamagon-Nicolet National Forest up north are under an emergency designation? It sounds serious, right? It's not really. It's a shortcut that the Trump administration is using to short-circuit proper forest management and to fast-track commercial logging on more than 100 million acres of national forest land across the country. It has led to an open letter about concerns from six different former leaders of the U.S. Forest Service, and we have one of them here this morning. Dave Bombeck served as chief of the United States Forest Service from 1997 to 2001. He also served as acting director of the Bureau of Land Management, making him the only person to have led the nation's two largest public land management agencies. Mike has described himself as a combat biologist, due to his battles with other agencies and officials who were more concerned with road building and engineering than environmental conservation. That doesn't make him some kind of extremist. Rather, he earned a reputation for crafting partnerships and policies that integrated science and economics to manage federal lands in the long-term public interest. Not bad for a guy who got to start working as a fishing guide for 11 summers near Hayward. We're also joined by Joe Hovell, who's been involved in sustainable forestry and conservation for decades. He chairs the Partners in Forestry Cooperative. He heads land conservation for the Northwood Alliance Incorporated and was the main author of their handbooks. He is consistently invited to give presentations at the Ottawa National Forest Visitor Center in Watersmeet, Michigan. So Joe Hovell and Dave Bombeck, good morning to both of you. Thank you, Joe, for being here. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Pat. We're happy to be on.
Yep. And Dave, you're on joining us by phone, correct?
Yes, this is Mike, yes.
Or Mike, I'm sorry, Mike. Let me ask first about what it is that this emergency declaration is that led to this letter of concern by former heads of the National Forest Service. Mike, tell us more about that.
Well, it was really about two things. Number one, concern about people and concern about land. First of all, 3,400 probationary employees of the Forest Service across the country were fired, with about one day notice. And the word probation is a bit misleading because probationary employees are often employees that are veterans that have worked as seasonals. Many have many summers of experience, or many are trained EMTs. They're trained first responders. They're trained in chainsaw safety. Typical people that, you know, fight fires, go out west or wherever they're needed. So number one, abusive treatment of local employees. And these are people that live in small towns like Hayward and Park Falls and Rhinelander and Eagle River, places like that. So that was the primary concern, is the way the employees were treated without any basically humanity of thinking, you know, these are young families with child care expenses, with house payments, depending upon health insurance. And that's initially what's concerned us.
Well, not to mention then what it's going to do for the folks who would, you know, use our national force and other facilities. And we've heard about the, you know, the layoffs that are affecting national parks as well. So this is something that's going to be noticed by far more than just all of these fired workers, right?
Absolutely. Well, we've got not only the fired probationary employees, but the reduction of another 5,000 or more employees across the country, basically about a third of the workforce. And again, these are people that live in small towns and communities for the most part. This isn't reducing the size of a workforce in Washington, D.C. But some of the services that we won't see, you know, we've got an executive order calling for a 25% increase in timber harvest. Well, you know, who's going to do the work? Who's going to lay out the timber sales? Who's going to do what is typically done if so many people are laid off? Plus potential campground closures, even though the directive from on high has been to keep campgrounds open. You've got things like, you know, pumping toilets, emptying garbage cans that people don't often think of. And again, this sort of hurts the little guy because people that use these campgrounds are typically more local. They can't afford cruises. They need an inexpensive vacation. And they drive, you know, 50 miles, 100 miles on a lake and fish and spend time with their families. And those services just won't be there like they have been in the past. Plus, many of these employees are, you know, EMTs. They're first responders. That's the way they've been trained. And they're part of their local volunteer fire department. So it's very far-reaching, far beyond what meets the eye.
Yeah, and Joe, let's bring you into this as well, because you certainly shared your thoughts on, you know, Partners in Forestry Cooperative and Northern Alliance, and, you know, some of your concerns about national forests. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
As you show on the screen, Pat, I wonder how many people realize the impact that national forests have on the lives of ordinary Americans. My top line shows that over 900 cities rely on national forest watersheds for their clean water. Let's think of Denver, Portland, Little Rock, Helena, Oakland, Salt Lake City, for example. The average annual value of timber from national forests in the past 20 years is about $330 million, but the value of water from these same lands exceeds $3.8 billion. And over 65 million Americans depend on national forests for their water. Two-thirds of all wild and scenic rivers are on national forest lands. And a point that I'll add there, there's some wild and scenic rivers in the Ottawa National Forest in the Upper Peninsula, and those rivers start in Wisconsin. They start right here in the Border Lakes region in Vilas and Iron Wisconsin.
And let me take things back over to you, Mike, and say that for people that are hearing these concerns and saying, well, this is just a bunch of, you know, radical environmentalist tree huggers, and they want nothing to happen with the forest. They want it to return to its primeval form when there's all of this, you know, economic potential in there. I don't actually hear anybody talking like that. Sustainable forestry practices as a part of the national and the Wisconsin economy have always been the situation here. This isn't, you're not looking for some otherwise radical agenda, right, Mike?
That's exactly right, Pat. The for example, on the Shawamigan and Nicolet, the average timber harvest a few decades ago was from 80 to 90 million board feet, and a board foot takes about 15,000 board feet to build the average single-family home. That's been gradually increasing over the last couple of decades to now in the neighborhood of 110 to 120 million board feet. So those values are out there, and they will continue to be out there as long as we harvest timber in a sustainable way. And the thing to keep in mind is the congressional mandate is under the Multiple Use Sustained Yield Act that puts all resources on an equal plane. And, you know, we've got to share. There's not enough to go around for everybody to have all of what they want. So, and that's, in a sense, is a challenge. The agency does have a tough mandate, but it's recreation, it's about water, it's about hunting and fishing, it's about trails, it's about timber harvest, it's about mining in some places. Out west, it's about grazing. So there's this whole array of interests. And to, for the administration to focus solely on one interest at the expense of others, this is really what we have to think about. So this is not a radical approach at all. This is a very balanced, in my view, conservative approach, because it largely maintains the status quo and keeps options open for the future. You know, once you increase timber harvest vastly, you're basically moving into a situation where you cut it today, it's going to take, 50, 100 years before that cycle is going to come around again. So we have to maintain an even keel on this stuff.
Yeah, it just seems there seems a parallel, and I don't know if it's apples to apples or not, but what we often heard Donald Trump saying about, drill, baby, drill, so that we can have American energy dominance. Well, we already are. We already are a dominant exporter of oil, so to drill more, these are things that, you know, some of the companies might not want to do. They might not have the labor force to do that. And now it seems like we're saying something similar with the forest of, you just outlined all these local ways that the local and the state economy benefit, as opposed to the Trump approach seems to be just bring in a bunch of multinational companies, you know, to increase their forestry. That's assuming they even want to and have the capacity to do that. It just does not seem to be the kind of sustainable plan that was already in place, Mike.
Well, you know, that's right on. You know, for example, the last four or five timber sales that have been put up in the western side of the Shawamigan have been no bid sales. So the demand for that product really isn't even there. So you know, it almost seems as though this executive order came under the guise of reducing imports from Canada, which we all want to be as sustainable locally as we possibly can, but with really little knowledge of what was going on locally and really little concern about long-term sustainability. When we look at forests, you know, we're talking, you know, not 2 and 4 year election cycles or 10 and 20 year economic cycles. We're talking about centuries. We started out with 16 million acres of forest in Wisconsin a few centuries ago of old growth. Now we have less than 16,000 acres out of the 16 million. So, you know, we need to be looking at how do we restore the forest? How do we maintain the productivity for the long haul for all resources? And this includes timber harvest and prescribed fire and thinning and fuel treatments and all that it takes to keep people safe. And the forest productive, and the water clean, and places for tourists to enjoy the outdoors with their families.
Right, and Joe, it just sounds a lot more like this is more about privatization and selling off land that belongs to all Americans, you know, essentially to make a buck.
That is our concern, Pat. And as I said in the bottom of the graphic, if we as a nation are unwilling to respect and protect this common treasure. This is a treasure that all Americans hold equally, that we will need no Defense Department, as we have already doomed ourselves.
We're talking to Joe Hovell here. He is with Partners in Forestry Cooperative and Northwoods Alliance, and Mike Dombeck, who is the former head of the U.S. Forest Service. He and other former heads of the U.S. Forest Service have written a letter about the Trump administration's plans for national forests, for commercial logging. And again, as we've said previously, when it comes to drilling for oil, this was not necessarily what anybody was looking for, and certainly not a healthy practice. It may sound like it on its face. Donald Trump may try to try to sell it as such, but as you're hearing here from Joe and from Mike, that is most certainly anything but the case. Now, coming up on our 8 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Senator Kelda Royce about her bill that would remove politicians' roadblocks to women's abortion care rights. And Sean O'Malley will help us understand what we can do with our personal finances in this time of what I would call Trump-tastic uncertainty. Remember, you can follow what we do over at UpNorthNewsWI.com. And, of course, what we do right here mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Let's continue our conversation now on this Monday morning, April 28th, talking to Joe Hovell, who chairs the Partners in Forestry Cooperative, and Mike Bombeck, former chief of the United States Forest Service. Joe, let me start with you. And for folks who have been watching on social media, we've had a slide that we've put up that Joe put together, all kinds of facts and features about our national parks and forests. And for folks listening on the radio, let me rattle off a couple of points that really stick with me near the bottom of your slide here, Joe. Economically, more than $13 billion annually from tourism on national forests, and over 9,000 miles across 136 scenic byways on national forests. Yes, there's something to talk about in terms of, you know, the economic output of logging and timber operations, but, you know, this notion of taking for granted that the tourism is just always going to be there, that is not an assumption I think anybody should be making, Joe.
I often use the analogy, Pat, that people do not travel north to see stumps and blacktop. They come people travel north to see lakes, rivers, trees, and let's say the abundance of nature that's so prevalent on our national forests.
Ken, let me put it this way to you, Mike. I mean, again, it's this notion of privatization and this feeling like, well, as long as there's, oh, it looks like Mike fell off on the phone line there. So Joe, I'll continue it with you. It's just that as long as there's a private sector, it will come in and manage things because it wants to take care of, you know, if it cuts everything down, then they can't do business anymore. But that does not necessarily make the private sector the more trustworthy manager of things like our national forest, does it?
Well, you know what makes me a little bit suspicious? I made the comment earlier about how we need to respect and protect this national treasure, and that this national treasure is owned by all Americans equally. And perhaps some of the people at the top end of the economic scale do not want to recognize that and are not satisfied with the fact that all Americans equally have a stake in the national forest lands.
Yeah. Joe, we had you on just over a year ago about Republican legislators and their effort to, shall we say, assist development in the Pelican Forest. Can you give us an update? What's the status up there? And has Trump's return to the White House meant that and other development projects on the drawing board, you might have to do more to point out the need to not overdevelop our natural resources up north?
Fortunately, the Pelican River project was completed. Our organization has a couple very modest forest legacy proposals in the works right now, in both in Vilas County and the town of Land O'Lakes, and they were funded under the Inflation Reduction Act in October. And there's been a great deal of trepidation from many of us as to how the current administration is going to carry through with this, with this sort of vendetta that they've shown against the Forest Service. We're also very fearful of this so-called cutback on the Forest Service and what it's going to do to their research stations. Like right here in Rhinelander, we have a Northern Research Station. In Houghton, Michigan, there's another research station. And like Mike so adequately said earlier, these are everyday people that work there. They're our neighbors, they're our friends. In fact, we have a board member for Northwoods Alliance that works at one of the research stations. So we're very, very fearful of all a great platter of different things. And there's so much uncertainty at this point. And as Mike said very, very well, that this personal effect on people is really disgusting. It's demeaning.
It really is, from folks, you know, out east who don't know this area. They just know about, you know, profit margins and things like that. Joe Hovel, thank you for the update. Appreciate it. Wish it was under better conditions and not always being on defense, but we do have you up there on the front line on defense, and that makes us very fortunate, Joe. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate being here.
You bet. Good to talk to you. 7:57 is the time right now. Here's what else we have coming up on the program this week. On Tuesday, Dan Schaefer will start his regular stint with us on Tuesday mornings. He is the Civic Media political editor and, of course, started the recombobulation area and will tell us about this week's big stories to watch for in Wisconsin politics. We'll also play back an interview with Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich on what Democrats need to change in order to win more elections in 2026. On Wednesday, we're going to talk about, in our climate check with Melissa Baldoff, a new bill in the legislature which raises this point, and it's not necessarily a partisan divide. Should Wisconsin utilities get an advantage when it comes to new transmission power line projects, or does doing that stifle competition? So you've got this whole notion of Wisconsin utilities versus out-of-state utilities, which is better for competition, but also which is, you know, better or less worse for the environment as these transmission lines go through. On Thursday, we're going to kick off the month of May, probably seeing a National Day of Action because it will be May Day, being planned by people all around the country who are cheesed off about Trump's first 100 days, which, by the way, we will mark in detail tomorrow. And then on Friday, we're going to talk to Brian Kennedy, the mayor of Glendale, and he is head of a national organization of local elected leaders, and a big part of what they do is to encourage others to run for office. That's something we preach all the time here, is the need to, you know, we focus on Congress, we focus on the president, the governor, but none of this works if people aren't running for their local city council or their town board or their school board. And folks just need to know, where do you start running for something like that? So Brian Kennedy is going to talk to us all about that. Jane Mattner coming up in our next hour, along with Brittany Merlot, Senator Kel DeRoyes, and Sean O'Malley. Thanks for spending some time up here as part of your mornings, powered by Up North News. We'll have more live from Chippewa Falls here on the Civic Media.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.